Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're going to try and do something that sounds, well, frankly impossible. We are going to try to see the invisible.
Or at least understand the monumental effort it takes to keep things from being seen.
Exactly. You know, when I think of stealth, my brain immediately goes to pop culture.
Oh, yeah.
I'm thinking of the Klingon bird of prey in Star Trek cloaking and just disappearing. Or, you know, Wonder Woman's invisible jet.
Right, the magic button.
Yeah, the magic button. I think for most of us, stealth equals magic invisibility cloak. You just flip a switch and poof, you're gone.
It's a fun image, isn't it? The idea that you can just vanish from the human eye. But the reality of low observable technology, which is the technical term for stealth, is a lot more grounded.
Low observable. L-O-H-O.
Right. It's a lot more mathematical. And honestly, I think it's a lot more interesting than the sci-fi version because of the sheer physics involved.
Okay, so L-O. Right off the bat, let's adjust our definitions. We aren't talking about being invisible to the naked eye, are we? If I walk up to a B-2 bomber on a runway, I can see it. It's a giant metal object.
You can absolutely see it. In fact, visual stealth, you know, hiding from the human eyeball, is actually the oldest and, in some ways, the least high-tech part of the equation today.
So what are we talking about then?
Modern stealth is really about managing the electromagnetic spectrum. It's about defeating sensors, radar, infrared, sonar. It is about breaking what they call the kill chain.
The kill chain, that sounds intense.
It is. In military doctrine, for an enemy to shoot you down, they have to do four things. You have to detect you, track you, target you, and then engage you. Stealth is about breaking that chain at step one.
At detection.
Right. If the radar can't see you until you're, say, 5 miles away, but you have a missile that can shoot 20 miles, you win. You are, for all intents and purposes, invisible.
Okay, so it's not magic, it's physics. And it's about shrinking that detection range way, way down.
Precisely. Think of it this way. Imagine you're standing in a pitch black field at night. You have a giant spotlight.
Okay.
If you point that light at a barn door, a huge amount of light is going to bounce right back at you, right? You see the barn door clearly.
Right. Big flat surface, big reflection, simple.
Now, imagine you point that same spotlight at a single black marble suspended in the air 100 yards away.
I'm barely going to see a reflection if I see anything at all.
Exactly. The goal of stealth technology is to turn a massive bomber aircraft, which is essentially a flying barn door, into that marble. It's about reducing the signature so that by the time the enemy sensors pick it up, it's already too late.
That is a perfect starting point. We are turning barn doors into marbles. And to understand how we got there, we have quite a roadmap ahead of us today.
We do.
We are going to dig into the surprisingly ironic origins of stealth technology. And spoiler alert, it involves a Soviet scientist whose own government just completely ignored him.
Oh, it's one of the great ironies of the Cold War. The equation for American air superiority was literally written in Moscow.
We're going to break down the mechanics, the shapes, the special paints, this weird physics of glitter.
And we're going to look at the future, where planes might fly without any moving parts at all.
It's a wild trajectory. So let's rewind. Before we had F-117s and B-2 bombers, humans have always been trying to hide in war. I assume this starts with just wearing green in the forest.
Essentially, yes. I mean, hunters have used vegetation for millennia. Sun Tzu wrote about visual concealment in The Art of War way back in the 5th century BC.
Right.
But if we're looking for the technological ancestors of modern stealth, we really have to look at World War I.
And I found this part of the research fascinating because there were some spectacular failures. I think we assume technology always moves forward, but sometimes it takes a hard left turn into bad idea.
Oh, absolutely.
Tell me about the Celon experiment.
Oh, this is a classic. A classic example of good idea on paper, terrible in practice. So in 1915, radar didn't exist. The only sensor that mattered was the Mark I eyeball.
You look up, you see a plane, you shoot at it.
That's it. So German engineers thought, what if the plane was transparent?
Like Wonder Woman's jet.
Exactly. They experimented with a material called Celon, which is a type of cellulose acetate. It's like a thick, rigid plastic wrap.
Okay, so they just wrapped a plane in it.
They actually stripped the canvas off entire aircraft, the Fokker E-3rd, the Albatross CI, and wrapped the whole skeleton of the plane in this clear Celon. The idea was, if the skin of the plane is clear, you can't see it against the sky.
In theory, that makes sense. If the sky is blue, the plane is blue. If it's cloudy, the plane is cloudy.
In theory. In practice, it was a nightmare. First, the material degraded really fast. Sunlight turned it yellow.
Oh, no.
So after a couple of weeks, you aren't flying an invisible plane. You're flying a sickly, nicotine-yellow plane that stands out against everything.
Gross. And probably not great for morale, flying a yellow plane.
It gets worse. Selen is plastic, so it expands and contracts with temperature. At high altitude, it's freezing, so the skin shrinks, gets brittle.
And on the ground.
On the tarmac in the summer, it expands and sags. It literally changed the aerodynamics of the plane while you were flying it. It vibrated. It drummed. Pilots said it was like flying inside a giant kazoo.
That sounds terrifying.
But the real stealth killer was the sun itself. When the sun hit that transparent skin, it didn't just pass through. It glinted.
So instead of an invisible plane, you had a giant flying mirror.
Basically a disco ball over the trenches.
Yeah.
It made the aircraft more visible, not less. And you have to imagine the pilot's experience. You're sitting in a transparent cockpit. You look down, and there is no floor. Just your boots and the ground 5,000 feet below.
Oh, Vertigo City.
Exactly. So the effort to make visually transparent aircraft was pretty quickly abandoned.
Okay, so visual transparency is a bust. But then we get to World War II, and we start seeing the beginning of sensor stealth, specifically with submarines.
Right. We have to talk about the Battle of the Atlantic.
Mm.
The primary sensor here isn't eyes anymore. It's ASDIC, or what we now call sonar.
Ting. Ping.
Precisely that. Active sonar sends out a sound wave. It travels to the water, hits the metal hull of a U-boat, and bounces back to the destroyer on the surface.
So how do you hide from sound?
You change the impedance.
Okay, hold on. Unpack that word for me. Impedance.
Sure. So in physics, when a wave, whether it's sound or radar, moves from one medium to another, like from water to steel, the difference in density causes a reflection. If the difference is huge, the reflection is huge. That's called an impedance mismatch.
So you need to make the transition from water to the hull smoother somehow.
Exactly. The Germans developed a coating called Elbrich, named after the invisible dwarf in German mythology. It was a layer of rubber tiles, about 4 millimeters thick. But here's the clever part. It wasn't just solid rubber. Inside the rubber, they drilled a specific pattern of circular air holes.
Air holes. Why?
To tune the density. The sound wave hits the rubber, enters those air cavities, and just bounces around inside them. The energy gets trapped and converted into a tiny amount of heat. It absorbs the ping instead of reflecting it.
That is incredibly clever. Did it actually work in combat?
It worked terrifyingly well. The U-480 was the first sub to use it. It operated in the English Channel, the most heavily defended water on Earth, and sank 4 ships. The British destroyers just couldn't get a lock on it. They reported the sonar echoes were fuzzy or non-existent.
Wow. Did it survive the war?
It did, right up until it hit a naval mine, which, sadly for the crew, stealth coatings can't protect you from. But the principle was proven. If you can absorb the energy of the sensor, you disappear.
And there was also something called diffuse lighting on ships. This one sounded totally counterintuitive to me, using lights to hide.
This is one of my favorite obscure technologies. It's called counter-illumination. So think about a ship on the horizon at night. Even if the ship is painted black, if there's any moonlight or starlight behind it, the ship appears as a black silhouette against the slightly lighter sky.
You are a black hole in the light.
Right. You are negative space. So the Royal Canadian Navy and the U.S. Navy experimented with what they called Yehudi lights. They put diffused lights on the ship or on the leading edge of an airplane wing to match the background brightness of the sky.
So you are basically filling in your own shadow with light.
Exactly. You're trying to achieve the same brightness as the background, so there is no contrast. In 1945, a Grumman Avenger aircraft equipped with Yehudi lights could get within 3,000 yards of a ship before being sighted.
3,000 yards. What was it without the lights?
Without the lights, it would be spotted from 12 miles away.
That is a massive difference. That's the difference between getting shot down and dropping your torpedo before they even know you're there.
It is. But then, of course, the villain of our story arrives. Yeah. Radar.
Radar ruins the party.
It changes absolutely everything. Visual stealth became secondary. If you can be seen by radio waves from 50 miles away, it doesn't matter if you're painted invisible or covered in lights.
And this brings us right to the Cold War and the famous U-2 spy plane. I think a lot of people know the U-2. It's that long, skinny, glider-looking plane. The Dragon Lady. The CIA thought this thing was untouchable, right?
That was the whole assumption. In the mid-50s, the CIA believed that if they just flew high enough, we're talking 70,000 feet or more, that Soviet radar couldn't track them. And Soviet missiles couldn't reach them. It wasn't about stealth. It was about pure altitude.
Spoiler alert, they were wrong.
Oh, very wrong. The Soviets tracked the U-2 almost immediately on its first flights. The radar operators could see it clearly. They just couldn't reach it yet. But the CIA knew it was only a matter of time before the missiles caught up.
So they started scrambling.
They started scrambling for a way to hide the plane from radar. And this leads us to Project Rainbow and the Dirty Birds.
Dirty Birds? It sounds like a bad sports team. What were they?
It was a desperate attempt to retrofit stealth onto a plane that wasn't designed for it. They were trying to reduce the radar cross-section, or RCS. They literally strung wires with ferret beads around the aircraft. They tried gluing a sort of radar-absorbing wallpaper inside the fuselage.
My wallpaper? You're kidding.
Basically, a honeycomb material meant to trap radar waves. But you have to remember, the U-2 is a delicate flower. It flies at the very edge of physics, what pilots call the coffin corner.
Why coffin corner?
Because at 70,000 feet, the air is so thin that the stall speed and the maximum speed are only a few knots apart. If you slow down a tiny bit, you fall out of the sky. If you speed up a tiny bit, the wings rip off.
And they decided to glue heavy wallpaper to this thing.
Exactly. It added weight and drag. The Dirty Birds were a disaster. The heat from the engine got trapped by the insulation, and it cooked the internal systems. The wires on the outside created so much drag that it lowered the flight ceiling. So instead of being invisible at 70,000 feet, they were highly visible at 65,000 feet.
So they realized they couldn't just slap stealth onto an existing plane like a sticker.
Exactly. You can't just retrofit stealth. It has to be in the DNA of the design.
Yeah.
And that realization led to the A-12 Oxcart, which was the precursor to the SR-71 Blackbird.
The coolest looking plane in history, period.
Hard to argue with that.
Yeah.
And the A-12 was the first to really integrate shape into the stealth equation. They used canted vertical stabilizers, tilted fins to deflect radar. They used composite materials. They even used a special fuel designed to reduce the signature of the exhaust plume.
But even the A-12 and the SR-71 weren't invisible to radar, right? They were just smaller on radar and really, really fast.
Right. They still relied on speed. Their motto was basically, if you see me, good luck catching me. But the dream of true invisibility, of being a ghost on the radar screen, that required a breakthrough in mathematics.
And here's the twist that I absolutely love. The breakthrough came from the Soviet Union.
It did. The ultimate irony.
Introduce us to Pyotr Ufintsev.
Pyotr Ufintsev was a brilliant Soviet physicist working at the Moscow Institute of Radio Engineering. In 1962, he published a book with the incredibly catchy title Method of Edge Waves in the Physical Theory of Diffraction.
I'm sure that was a bestseller. Flew off the shelves.
I think it sold a few hundred copies, maybe. But the content was revolutionary. See, before Ufintsev, we knew how to calculate radar reflection for simple shapes, a sphere, a cylinder, a flat plate. But a complex shape, like an airplane, it was just a guessing game.
Why was it so hard?
Because radar doesn't just bounce off the flat parts. It diffracts off the edges. It sort of ripples around corners like water around a rock. Ufintsev developed the equations that could calculate exactly how a radar wave would scatter off the edge of a two-dimensional shape.
So he gave us the formula. If you build a shape this way, the radar will go that way.
Exactly. He turned stealth from an art into a predictable science.
So why didn't the Soviet Union build a stealth bomber in 1962? They had the book. The guy worked for them.
This is the tragedy of bureaucracy. The Soviet senior engineers looked at his math and said, this is interesting theoretically, but it's useless for airplanes.
Why useless?
Because the equations only worked well for flat, faceted surfaces, triangles. And as any aerodynamicist will tell you, a plane made of flat triangles is a brick. It shouldn't fly. So the Soviets stamped the book unclassified and let him publish it openly.
They let the secret to invisibility walk right out the front door.
And walk right onto the desk of a translator at the U.S. Air Force Foreign Technology Division.
I just love this image. Some bored translator sifting through stacks of dry Russian physics papers and suddenly, wait a minute, what is this?
Effectively, yes. In 1971, the translation landed at Lockheed Martin's famous Skunk Works. And the head of Skunk Works, a guy named Ben Rich, read it. He realized that Ufintsev had just handed them the keys to the kingdom.
But there was a catch, right? You mentioned the Soviets didn't have the computing power.
Right. Even Lockheed's computers in the 1970s weren't powerful enough to simulate curved surfaces using Ufintsev's math. They could only calculate flat, faceted surfaces.
So that's why the F-117 Nighthawk looks like that. It looks like a low-polygon video game character from 1995, all jagged edges.
Exactly. It looks that way because that was the only shape that computers could handle. They called the design the Hopeless Diamond.
The Hopeless Diamond? Why hopeless?
Because aerodynamically, it was a catastrophe. A shape made of flat, jagged facets produces almost no lift and incredible amounts of drag. It had the aerodynamics of a falling leaf. One of the Skunk Works engineers famously looked at the blueprint and said to Ben Rich, Ben, you've lost your mind. This thing will never get off the runway.
But they built it anyway.
They did, because they had an ace up their sleeve that the Soviets didn't consider. Fly-by-wire technology.
Computers flying the plane.
Exactly. The F-117 is inherently unstable. If you turned off the flight computers, it would tumble out of the sky in seconds. But the computer makes thousands of tiny adjustments per second to the control surfaces to keep it stable. We traded aerodynamic stability for invisibility.
That is a massive gamble. Okay, let's get into the how. We've been tossing around this term RCS, or radar cross-section. We need to unpack that. When we say we are reducing the RCS, what are we actually measuring?
We are measuring the size of the echo that returns to the radar station. It's usually measured in square meters. For comparison, a conventional fighter jet might have an RCS of maybe 5 square meters. A B-52 bomber is huge, maybe 100 square meters, that's your barn door.
And a stealth aircraft, the Marble.
A B-2 Spirit bomber, which has a wingspan of 172 feet, has the radar signature of a large insect, maybe a bumblebee.
That is mind-blowing. You have this massive metal object and the radar operator sees a bug. How? I want to get into the physics here.
It's a combination of two main things, shape and materials. Let's start with shape, specifically that hopeless diamond approach.
The facets.
Right. We need to talk about specular reflection.
Specular reflection. Is that like a mirror?
Exactly like a mirror. Think about a round pole. If you shine a flashlight at a round pole, no matter where you stand, you see a highlight. There is always a point on the curve that is perpendicular to you, bouncing the light right back.
Because it's curved. It's scattering light everywhere.
Right. Curves are bad for stealth because they scatter energy in all directions. Now think about a flat mirror. If you shine a flashlight at a flat mirror at a 45-degree angle, where does the light go?
It bounces off at a 45-degree angle away from me. I don't see anything.
And you, holding the flashlight, see nothing. That is the principle of the facets. The F-117 is made of flat plates angled so that they deflect radar waves away from the source. They bounce the energy into the sky or into the ground, anywhere but back to the radar receiver.
But the plane has to be visible from some angle, right? I mean, the energy has to go somewhere.
It does. And this leads to a really clever concept called parallel alignment. If you look at a stealth plane, you'll notice that all the edges, the wings, the hatches, the air intakes, are aligned at the same few angles.
I have noticed that. Everything looks parallel. It has this very distinct look.
That is completely deliberate. The goal is to confine the radar return to a very specific narrow spike.
Mm.
So if the radar hits the plane from just the right angle, it will get a massive flash. They call it glitter.
Glitter. That sounds pretty, but also pretty dangerous.
It is. It's a momentary bright flash on the radar screen. But because the plane is moving at 600 miles per hour, that flash lasts for a millisecond and then it's gone. To the radar operator, it just looks like a glitch or atmospheric noise. It doesn't look like a trackable target.
That is so clever. You take the reflection and you bundle it into a tiny beam that shoots off into nowhere, or it just blips for a second and vanishes.
Precisely. But shape can't do it all. Sometimes radar waves get trapped in cracks or hit parts of the plane that can't be faceted. Or you have to deal with creeping waves that travel along the skin of the aircraft. That's where materials come in.
The sponge approach.
Yeah.
Radar absorbent material.
RAM. Exactly. RAM.
I read about iron ball paint. That sounds incredibly heavy.
It is incredibly heavy. It's a paint that contains microscopic iron spheres coated in carbonyl iron or ferrite.
How does that work? Is it just blocking the wave like a shield?
No, it's converting it. This goes back to that idea of impedance. When the electromagnetic wave from the radar hits the iron sphere, it induces a magnetic field. It causes the molecules in the iron to oscillate.
It literally shakes them.
It shakes them. And that friction creates heat. It's called magnetic hysteresis.
Ew.
The paint literally eats the radar energy and turns it into a tiny, tiny amount of warmth.
So the energy goes in, but it doesn't come out. It just dissipates as heat.
Correct. But applying this stuff is a nightmare. It's toxic, it's heavy, and it has to be applied with robotic precision. If the thickness varies by even a fraction of a millimeter, the impedance matching fails, and the plane starts to glow on radar.
What about the pilot? I mean, you have this super stealthy plane, but inside the cockpit, you have a pilot wearing a helmet. Isn't a helmet a giant radar reflector? It's round, it's hard.
It is. A pilot's helmet inside a cockpit is a corner reflector just waiting to happen. The radar goes through the glass, hits the helmet, bounces off the back of the seat, and comes right back out. It's basically a radar beacon.
So how do you fix that? You can't paint the pilot in iron ball paint.
You treat the glass. They coat the canopy in a very, very thin film of gold or indium tin oxide.
Gold, like actual gold.
Just a few atoms thick. It's conductive. To a radar wave, which has a long wavelength, that gold layer looks like a solid metal wall. the radar hits the canopy and just flows over it like it's part of the fuselage.
But the pilot can still see out.
Yep, because light waves are tiny enough to pass right through the gaps in the gold mesh. Like a microwave door. You can see your food cooking, but the microwaves can't get out.
That is wild. Gold-plated windows to hide the pilot. But we touched on this earlier. There is a trade-off. We talked about the aerodynamic instability. Is that still true for the newer planes? The B-2 looks smooth. It doesn't look like a diamond.
The B-2 Spirit represents the second generation. By the late 80s, supercomputers had finally caught up. We could now calculate the radar cross-section of curved surfaces so we could move away from the hopeless diamond and build the continuous curvature.
The flying wing.
Right. The B-2 is a masterpiece of complex curvature. And you'll notice it has no vertical tail.
Wait, no tail? How does it steer?
That's the trick. A vertical tail is a radar disaster. It sticks straight up and reflects everything. So the B-2 uses drag rudders, split flaps on the wingtips that open up to create drag on one side or the other to turn the plane. And again, a massive amount of computer power keeps it pointing straight.
It really feels like stealth is just a constant battle against the laws of physics.
It is. And we've only talked about radar. If you conquer radar, you still have other problems.
Heat, infrared.
Exactly.
Yes.
Missiles like the Sidewinder track heat. And jet engines are essentially giant blowtorches. Hiding that heat signature is a huge challenge.
So how do they do it?
A few different ways. First, if you look at the tailpipes of the F-117 or the F-22, they aren't round. They are slit-shaped or rectangular.
Why does the shape matter for heat?
It spreads out the exhaust plume. A round pipe creates a concentrated core of hot gas that travels a long way. A wide, flat nozzle spreads that gas out, which increases the surface area so it mixes faster with the cool ambient air.
Ah, so you're cooling the exhaust faster, making it harder to see.
Exactly. The B-2 bomber takes it a step further. It vents its exhaust on top of the wing.
On top. But why?
So the body of the aircraft physically blocks the heat signature from any ground-based sensors. The wing itself acts as a shield. They also inject cool air into the exhaust stream before it even leaves the plane. It's called trenching.
So they're hiding the heat, masking the radar. What about sound? We talked about submarines, but what about helicopters, like the stealth Blackhawks that were supposedly used in the Bin Laden raid?
Right. Helicopters are loud. That thwack, thwack, thwop sound is very distinctive. And that sound comes from the tip of the rotor blade hitting the air turbulence created by the blade in front of it. It's a mini sonic boom at the tip.
So how do you silence that?
You can't silence it completely, but you can disguise it. Some stealth helicopters use something called modulated blade spacing.
What does that mean?
The blades aren't spaced evenly around the hub. They're spaced at slightly different intervals. One might be at 90 degrees, the next at 85, the next at 95.
So it breaks up the rhythm.
It spreads the noise across a wider range of frequencies. Instead of a distinct rhythmic thwop that your brain and a sensor recognizes immediately, you get a softer, more white noise kind of sound. It just blends into the background wind.
That is fascinating. It's like breaking the pattern so the brain can't latch onto it.
That's a perfect way to describe it.
Then there's the visual aspect again. We talked about ship wakes in the outline. You can see a ship's wake from space with radar.
You can. Synthetic aperture radar satellites can see the wake pattern of a ship, even if they can't see the ship itself clearly. The wake persists for miles. And spray. When a ship cuts through waves, it throws up a cloud of water spray. Radar hits that spray and it lights up like a Christmas tree.
So how do you fix that?
Hull design. You design the hull to slice through the water with minimal disturbance. The Visby-class corvettes from Sweden or the U.S. Zumwalt-class destroyers have these tumble-home hulls.
Tumble-home.
Means the hull slopes inward as it goes up, like a pyramid. This deflects radar. But the bow is also designed to pierce the wave rather than ride over it, which dramatically reduces the wake and spray.
Just seems like every time you solve one problem, another one pops up.
That is the history of warfare in a nutshell. Measure and countermeasure.
Speaking of countermeasures,
right,
we are moving into the future. Because as good as stealth is, the sensors are getting better.
That is the inevitable march of technology. Moore's law applies to radar too.
So processing power.
Right. We talked about glitter earlier. Those tiny fleeting flashes of radar return. In the 1980s, computers filtered those out as noise. Oh, that's just a bird or a cloud.
Right.
Today, computers are fast enough and smart enough to track those glitches, stitch them together using AI, and say, hey, that pattern of glitches is moving at 600 knots. That's a plane.
So the invisible plane is starting to flicker back into view?
To some extent, yes.
Yeah.
Especially against low-frequency radar.
Explain that. Why does low-frequency radar see stealth planes?
It's just simple physics.
Yeah.
Stealth shaping the facets and curves works best against high-frequency radar, the kinds used for targeting missiles. Those waves are short, centimeters long. They hit a facet and bounce off predictably. But low-frequency radar has wavelengths that are meters long.
Giant waves.
Giant waves.
Yeah.
When a wave is the same size as the aircraft, the stealth shaping just stops working. The physics changes. The whole aircraft resonates. It's called Rayleigh scattering.
So if low-frequency radar can see them, why don't we just use that everywhere?
Because it's inaccurate. Oh. It can tell you there is something in that 5-mile area, but it can't tell you it is right here. You can't guide a missile with it. But it alerts the enemy that you are coming. It ruins the surprise.
So the cat and mouse game continues. Let's talk about the new frontiers, the stuff that sounds like pure sci-fi, metasurfaces.
This is exciting stuff. We talked about how the F-117 had to be faceted and the B-2 has to be a smooth flying wing. Metasurfaces could change all that. These are artificial materials with nanostructures that have properties that just don't exist in nature.
Like what?
Like a negative refractive index.
Okay, in English.
Think about a straw in a glass of water. It looks bent, right? That's refraction. Metasurfaces can, theoretically, bend electromagnetic waves around an object. So instead of reflecting the wave or absorbing it, they could potentially guide the wave around the plane and out the other side.
Like water flowing around a rock.
Exactly. If the wave goes around you and continues on its path to the receiver, it looks like it never hit anything at all. That is true invisibility.
That is an actual cloaking device.
Theoretically, yes. We are a long way from putting it on a jet, but the physics is real.
And plasma stealth. That sounds like something straight out of a video game.
Plasma stealth is the idea of creating a cloud of ionized gas plasma around the vehicle.
Like a force field.
In a way, yeah. Plasma absorbs radio waves very, very effectively. If you can envelop the aircraft in a layer of plasma, the radar energy gets absorbed before it even hits the skin of the plane. The Soviets actually experimented with this on a missile project called Kuload.
So why aren't we doing this yet? What's the catch?
Energy. Generating a plasma cloud requires massive amounts of electricity. And there's another catch. Plasma glows.
It glows.
Brightly. In the visible spectrum and the infrared. So you might be invisible to radar, but you're a glowing beacon to heat sensors and cameras.
Ah, the classic trade-off. You solve one problem, you create another.
Always.
But there is one development that seems very real and very imminent. The flapless plane. Fluidics.
This is the next big leap. I really believe that.
So explain the problem first. Conventional planes have flaps, rudders, ailerons, moving parts. Why is that bad for stealth?
Right. And every time a flap moves, it creates a gap. It creates a seam. And as we know, gaps reflect radar. Plus, they are heavy, they require hydraulics, they're complex.
So how do you fly without flaps?
You use air. It's called active flow control.
You fly the plane by blowing air on it.
Yes.
Yeah.
It relies on something called the Kawanda effect. If you blow a high-speed jet of air over a curved surface, the air tends to stick to it and follow the curve. By blowing air out of tiny slots in the wing, you can bend the airflow. You can create lift or drag just by puffing air.
So you can steer, climb, and dive just by blowing air out of different slots. No moving metal.
Exactly. This allows for a completely seamless wing. No gaps, no hinges, no hydraulic actuators.
Is this just theoretical?
Not anymore. BAE Systems in the UK has already flown drones using this. The Demon and the Medjime. The Medjime drone maneuvered using only blown air. And right now, DARPA is building the X-65 Crane.
Crane. Control of revolutionary aircraft with novel effectors, of course.
The X-65 is designed to be a full-scale X-plane. They started construction in early 2024. They are aiming for a flight in 2025.
That is just around the corner.
It is. If it works, it could reduce the weight of aircraft by eliminating heavy hydraulic systems, it could reduce drag, and it could significantly improve stealth because you remove all those reflective gaps.
And it feels like we are moving from mechanical engineering to pure fluid dynamics. We aren't building machines anymore. We are building sculptures that manipulate air.
That's a beautiful way to put it.
So we've gone from the Hochless Diamond, a brick that only flew because of computers, to smooth organic shapes that fly by blowing air. The evolution is just incredible.
It is a testament to how the constraints of physics can drive innovation. We couldn't beat the radar with brute force, so we had to outsmart it with geometry and chemistry and physics.
But I want to go back to that thought about fragility. You mentioned Moore's Law. You mentioned that sensors are getting better. Is there a point where stealth becomes obsolete?
That is the big question in defense circles right now. There is a school of thought that says physical stealth, the shaping, the coatings, is approaching a point of diminishing returns.
Meaning we can't make the planes much stealthier than they already are.
Right. I mean, we're already down to the size of a bumblebee. Can we get to the size of a mosquito? Maybe. But the cost is astronomical. Meanwhile, the processing power to detect those tiny signals is getting cheaper and faster every single year.
So if the computer can process 1 billion signals a second, it can find the bumblebee in all that noise.
Exactly. And that raises the question, will the future of stealth not be about shape at all? Will it be about electronic warfare? Jamming, hacking the enemy's radar so it lies to the operator.
Or maybe something like quantum radar.
Quantum radar is the wild card. It uses entangled photons. If a photon hits the plane and bounces back, the entanglement changes. You can't hide from that. It doesn't rely on reflection intensity. It relies on quantum states. If that becomes real, physical stealth as we know it is dead.
It really makes you think. We spend billions developing these shapes, these paints, these incredible technologies, and it all hinges on the idea that the other guy's eyes or radar won't get sharper.
It's the Red Queen's race from Alice in Wonderland. You have to run as fast as you can just to stay in the same place.
So here is my final thought for everyone listening. We started with the idea of Wonder Woman's invisible jet, and in a way, we built it. We used math from a Soviet book, paint made of iron and windows made of gold. But unlike magic, science doesn't stand still. The cloak of invisibility is only as good as the eyes looking for it.
And those eyes are always opening wider.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the art of invisibility. We will see you, or maybe we won't, next time.
Take care.